Hello, everybody. This is Robert the Tech Doctor, back for yet another round of the Tech Doctor podcast. And as always, I have along with me Allison Hartley. How are you doing, Allison?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. Coming along. My Mac is still in various stages of being reborn here, but I am getting it back to its former glory. So that's always a challenge.
Well, you are correct. That is indeed a challenge, but you are making progress, and that's what counts.
Yep.
And I also heard you on a really great edition of the new Parallels podcast that Shelley Brisbane is doing, and congratulations on a great job on that podcast.
Oh, thank you. It was so much fun, and everybody needs to also check out the Parallels podcast as well. It's really good. We'll put it in the show notes.
Sounds like a plan. Well, today we're really fortunate to have back with us the Lord and Master of Mac for the Blind, John Panarese, and John is here to talk to us all about some new tutorials that he has released and is in the process of adding more and more, even as we speak almost. John, welcome back to the Tech Doctor podcast, and tell us a little bit about your tutorials, if you will.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back. It's an honor and a privilege to be back. You guys were great to work with the first time, so I'm really glad to be back here again. And Allison, I went through what you are going through now, rebuilding your Mac. And it's one of these things you kind of have to do as a process, because you'll think, oh, I got everything back to the way it was. And all of a sudden you'll be doing something and go, uh-oh, I forgot something. So I know. But the audio tutorials has been an idea that people have been sort of encouraging and nudging me to do for 2 or 3 years. And I've had several clients tell me, you know, you should record these lessons and sell them and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I've always been sort of resistant to doing that, just as, you know, I just train people. I work with people. It's just not something that's ever really been on my radar. At the beginning of the summer, I was kind of looking at the summer because as a trainer, when you work with state agencies, things slow down, you know, everybody goes on vacation. And I was saying to myself, you know, I really got to find something to sort of help get a little bit of some extra income on the side here. And I was kicking around a bunch of ideas. And my father had passed away last October. And we were visiting the cemetery at Father's Day, and kind of one of these strange, ironic things where I was kind of standing at his graveside and thinking to myself, you know, Dad, what would you tell me to do? What would be some advice you'd give me? And all of a sudden, as we were driving home, I got, maybe I should record a lesson and see how it goes. So when I got home, I recorded an introduction to VoiceOver in the Mac. And it came out all right, and I sent it out to a few people, and they were saying, oh, you know, it's really great, I love your style, but everybody had a critique about the audio. And some people were saying I was too loud, some people were saying VoiceOver was too loud, and it was too much background noise. So it was driving me crazy, and I'm like, do I really want to put something up on my website like this? So I go out to NFB in Florida for the national convention, and I'm walking around, and I stopped at a booth, and I was talking to a friend of mine, one of my people who refers clients to me from the state of Washington. And after I got done with the conversation, somebody taps me on the shoulder and says, John Panarese. And I go, yeah, who is this? And he goes, Derek Lane, who was my audio engineer. I'm sure Allison remembers from when I did Triple Click Home. He was our audio engineer. He just happened to be there for Blind Bargains. And we got into this conversation, and all of a sudden, I didn't even think of it. I just said, oh, by the way, Derek, I was thinking about doing some audio tutorial lessons I'd like to sell on my website. Would you be interested in cleaning them up for me, doing the audio editing? And we worked things out, and he agreed to do it. So I ended up re-recording the introduction thing and sent it off to him. And, you know, Derek just does fantastic work. I mean, any of the credit to the quality of the audio and everything goes to Derek, because he put the music in, you know, he took care of the levels, that everything that I know nothing about as a person, you know, who's just recording stuff. So he recommended Audio Hijack as an app to use, and I knew nothing about this stuff. So I ended up contacting Darcy Bernard. I do the Maccessibility Roundtable podcast with him and Holly Anderson. I know they were using it. Darcy was nice enough to send me a session file. Basically set up, all I had to do was change a couple of things, my microphone and one other setting, and I was off and running. And, you know, I did, I think it's 6 or 7 now Mac lessons. The iOS stuff is starting to go up now. I think There's two ready, which will be up probably by the end of today or tomorrow. So it's been an interesting process recording this stuff. And what you're going to hear is really the way I work with my clients. I try to be very systematic, very methodical. And I know people are going to say when they listen to some of them, well, you know, you left this out. Oh, you know, you could do things this way. You know, you could do things that way. And I'm well aware of that. And I even say it on the website in the text information on the main page. I know there are more than one ways to do some tasks that I teach. And sometimes I deliberately leave certain things out because I'm trying to make these tutorials work for the most widespread audience without being specific to a version of the operating system, whether it's the Mac or iOS. So basically, you get the most bang for your buck. So that's really the approach that I've been trying to take.
Well, I think the tutorials are really excellent, and I've had the chance to review them this week, at least the ones that you've gotten done so far. And rather than me say that, though, let's just let one of these tutorials speak a little bit for itself, if that's all right. I'm not going to play the introduction one, which is the one that I would recommend people start with, especially if you haven't been using VoiceOver for very long or if you really need to learn about how to configure VoiceOver and those kinds of things. But one of the issues that I hear so often misunderstood by people who are thinking about the Mac or who aren't all that familiar with the Mac is the whole area of interaction and what that is about on the Mac. So I'd like to play just a little bit of the beginning of the interaction tutorial so that people can get an idea of what these things sound like and just how well done they are. So here we go with a little bit of John telling us about interaction on the Mac.
Welcome to the Mac for the Blind audio tutorial series. I'm John Panarese, and today I'm going to be discussing the concept or feature of interaction in VoiceOver for Mac OS X. Just for the purposes of knowing what system I'm using here and our operating system and so forth, I am using my iMac. This is a 21-inch 2013 iMac running OS 10.10 for Yosemite. However, keep in mind that interaction has been a concept or a feature that's really existed in VoiceOver for several versions now. So even if you're running Mavericks or Mountain Lion or Lion, it doesn't matter. You will be able to get something out of this tutorial because it really works the same way. Now, for a Windows person, interaction is one of the more confusing things when you're trying to learn the Mac. And even for non-Windows users, sometimes trying to wrap your brain around interaction and knowing when and when not to do it can be a bit of a challenge. So I guess the best way to describe interaction is taking a closer look at an application interface or a screen. Now, Apple has deliberately segregated parts of the application screens, no matter which application you're in, so that the user doesn't really wander into areas that are not really going to be useful to them, or to sort of make it easier to understand how an application screen is organized. I'm going to actually let you hear this in a little bit, but let's just say, for example, the Finder window. Finder is, for Windows people, as a reference point, is like your My Computer or the Windows Explorer feature that allows you to look at your files and folders on your system. So when you open up your hard drive, the Macintosh HD in Finder, you're facing the classic Finder window. And visually, this window is separated into three main parts: the toolbar that runs across the top of the screen, the sidebar that is to the left, and the browser that is to the right. So when you first open the hard drive, you can easily navigate between these three areas. However, when you interact, you have to interact with one of those areas to be able to see, quote-unquote, what is contained in that particular part of the interface. So if you interact with the browser, you can then navigate your files and folders freely. But once you interact, you can't really go to the sidebar or the toolbar until you stop interacting. I guess another way of approaching this or putting this is not my analogy. I actually heard this at a presentation a few years ago, and it's kind of stuck in my mind, is even if you're blind, it doesn't matter. Think of a sightseeing helicopter tour over the Grand Canyon. When the pilot first takes you up, he or she is going to give you a really bird's eye view of the canyon. Way up there, you get to see everything in its majesty. But with that said, you don't get to see any features, any specific areas, any landmarks in detail. You just see the whole canyon overall. But as the tour continues, the pilot will take you down and allow you to see specific points of interest within the canyon itself. Once you do that, you then lose the perspective that you had when you first went up way up high. You're not seeing the whole Grand Canyon in its majesty. So that's pretty much like how you'll be facing the Mac. When you interact with an interface, you lose the perspective of the overall screen, but you're then allowed to interact with the specific parts of that interface that you need to.
I think that's a really precise, easy to understand, cogent way to help people begin to understand interaction. And that's why I wanted to play that portion, just so that people can see the kind of thing that they would be getting if they were to purchase these tutorials.
I love that analogy of the Grand Canyon. I think it's really, like you said, really concise. It really puts the concept into a perspective that I think anybody can understand.
So, John, it does honestly sound like this is something that you have thought a lot about and obviously taught other people. And I guess that's one of the things that really does make this tutorial stand out. It's clear that these concepts, these ideas, this way of teaching this information isn't new for you. So I guess this is really where your experience pays off, huh?
Well, that's just it. When you've been doing this with so many clients, it's given me a lot of time and a lot of experience to kind of come up with different ways, because when you're working with people, everybody's an individual. So you try to find some kind of analogy or some kind of approach that will work for the most people. And that seems to be the one. And I wish I could remember who actually used that Grand Canyon analogy, because it wasn't mine. I heard it at a presentation. I just happened to be standing in the doorway too. And I wish I could remember what the name of the person was. So if you're out there and you happen to hear that, thank you, because that was not my idea.
It's a good idea, though, in the sense that it completely takes the person out of just thinking, oh, this is some weird thing that you have to do on the Mac, and it's so unique to the Mac. There's never been anything in the world like this before. Well, almost anyone can relate to the Grand Canyon.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's why it seems to be work. You know, like I said, everybody, you got to come up with different approaches to try to get them to understand certain concepts, and interaction is always one of the biggest challenges.
Who are these tutorials intended for? What's your target audience for them?
Well, I try to make them as general as possible. There's a lot of people who are either switching to the Mac or Windows users who just want Mac experience, and they're coming over and they're dealing with the Mac for the first time. So I guess you'd call it the primary audience is to teach people about the Mac. But by the same token, I know there are a lot of voiceover users who might have several years of experience, but they're sort of self-taught. And they might not have all of the holes filled in their knowledge. You know, there's gaps. So I'm kind of hoping that these tutorials will serve both the beginner, the newbie, quote unquote, as well as maybe somebody who's just, you know, wants to get some extra information. And I'm a firm believer in my stuff is out there, but there's a lot of other people who are doing this. I mean, you know, AppleViz and a lot of other places that offer these types of things. And the more resources you use, the better off you're going to be as somebody learning these things.
I find that even though I consider myself a Mac power user in the sense that I do know a lot about using VoiceOver on the Mac, I always learn something from these books and these tutorials that come along, and yours was no exception. I was kind of reminded when you did the whole section on the different commanders, how the different commanders differ among themselves. Like some of them have predefined keystrokes that you can't change, and others have keystrokes that you can change. And so just little subtleties like that, that either I had kind of glossed over or forgotten about. But I honestly think these tutorials are for everyone who cares about using the Mac with VoiceOver.
I learned something from each one, just a little tidbit that either something I had forgotten or something that was a gap in my own knowledge that now is filled, I really agree that these tutorials would be appropriate for absolutely anybody from the beginner to anyone who considers themselves an advanced or power user. I particularly like, John, when you were talking in the intro to VoiceOver tutorial, you emphasized how important it was that if somebody was switching from Windows, that you would draw parallels when you could between Mac and Windows, but by and large, the individual would need to sort of start fresh in terms of not trying to compare too much. I can't tell you how many times on mailing lists or on Twitter I've seen, this isn't like JAWS. And it's like, well, no, it's not.
No, it's not. You're learning a new screen reader and a new operating system. You can't expect it to be like Windows. It's not. That's the hardest thing with a client sometimes is, you know, they want to, well, you know, in JAWS you can, you know, and I always, stop. You're not using JAWS anymore. You're not in Kansas anymore.
which is why it's really important, I think, in the beginning, you know, when working with somebody to be like, okay, so you've chosen the Mac for specific reasons. So obviously let's just try to isolate this stuff and
I mean, I'll draw, you know, there's reference points sometimes that are very helpful.
Oh yeah.
People and it's the same sort of thing when I was learning. So I always try to incorporate them when I work with somebody, but I try to draw a distinct line between reference points and just like using it as a crutch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you made the point also, which I very much agree with, and it's certainly what I had to do, is really I think what one needs to do if they're making a switch from Windows to the Mac, or if you really want to learn the Mac and you formerly knew Windows, put your Windows machine away for 2 weeks or a month. Make yourself figure out how to do those things that come as second nature on Windows or that come automatically to you on Windows. Make yourself figure out how to do all those things on the Mac. Then you will have, in my mind, gone a long way toward conquering the basics, at least, of the operating system.
And that's the only way to do it. You have to immerse yourself. If you treat it like a hobby or you always have that Windows PC to go back to if you get frustrated, you're really not going to learn. You know, it's like I say to people, I know it might be psychologically a defense mechanism, us blind people who went through the whole agonizing process of learning Windows, but we seem to forget that that didn't happen overnight.
Right.
And it's not going to happen with the Mac overnight. No matter how experienced, how many years you've been using Windows, you can't expect that, oh, that somehow makes it so that, okay, in 2 weeks, I'm going to master the Mac. It doesn't happen that way. You got to put an effort into it.
This week or this past week, there was an anniversary of Windows 95. It was 20 years old. And I so vividly remember 20 years ago when Windows 95 came out, the very first screen readers started having accessibility for Windows 95. And I went and spent a weekend with Larry Skutkan, who was an Apple developer who now works for the American Printing House, spent an entire weekend with Larry Skutkan trying to just wrap my head around how to use Windows 95 with a screen reader. So this is not a new situation that is unique to the Mac, that it takes a while to really grasp all these concepts. This is the way it is if you're a blind person who wants to learn to use an operating system that was primarily designed to be used visually. You've got some learning to do ahead of you.
That's it. That's what it comes down to. And as long as you are determined, patient, you know, that's how you're going to succeed. If you're going to, you know, like I say to people in the beginning particularly, if you're getting frustrated, walk away. Walk away. Yeah. Don't beat yourself up. Don't torture yourself. You know, you walk away for a little while, get yourself a better, fresh perspective, and then come back and try again.
Perhaps all the Mac tutorials should be accompanied with a tutorial on self-compassion, right?
It's true. And it really is true.
Or some drink recipes.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't have to be or. Maybe both.
Yeah, now included.
Yeah, I really think it's important for people to take their time, be kind to yourself, and take it one step at a time. That's how you learn these things. They are complicated. And the reason they're complicated is because they have so many features. There's so much you can do with them. They have to be complicated, but it's doable. And I think this tutorial really demonstrates that. Tell us a little bit about kind of what you have available now and what's coming, if you don't mind, or where are you headed with these tutorials?
Well, at the moment of this recording, I have the introduction to VoiceOver in the Mac, which is a free download. We have the interaction finder, the VoiceOver utility, the commanders, Safari 1 and Safari 2, the introduction to iOS and VoiceOver, which is a free download, and the typing in iOS and VoiceOver, or I should say text entry is more or less the topic. I will have a working with text on the Mac, which is already recorded. I just need to get it to Derek. I have working with Apple Mail on the Mac, which is, again, recorded, just needs to go to Derek. And I have a rotor in iOS. The whole lesson is on how to use the rotor effectively in iOS, and that's just got to go to Derek. So hopefully, I'm saying hopefully by September 15th, all of these tutorials should be up there, and maybe another one or two, depending on how much time I have before September 7th when I leave for vacation.
Okay, so excellent. So there's already quite a variety of things up there. Now, we haven't really said, but these tutorials are available on the MacForTheBlind.com website, is that right?
Yes. And there's a link on the main page to the audio tutorials, and then there'll be separate links for if you're only interested in the Mac or if you're only interested in iOS. So they're separated and they're labeled, you know, lesson one, lesson two. So it should be pretty easy to, you know, to figure out and follow. And obviously you select which ones you want. As time goes on and there's more up there, I will try to put some packages together and ones that I think, like already Safari 1 and 2 can be bought separately or they can be bought with a discount. And I'm trying to keep these things as affordable as possible. I'm not trying to kill people. I realize a lot of blind people are, you know, underemployed or not employed. And I'm not looking to, you know, bleed everybody. So I'm trying to keep them under the $50 mark. So hopefully they will be pretty affordable and reasonable to people.
So I assume there's some sort of cart or some way to purchase them directly from the website with a credit card?
Yeah, it's through PayPal, but even if you don't have a PayPal account, you can still use a credit card through PayPal to purchase them.
Okay, well, that makes it easy. So if you do have PayPal, I personally like purchasing with PayPal because it means I don't have to engage my credit card online.
Right. And it's international as well. So if you're not in the United States, you can still purchase them. I already had a few people from the UK, so they're available.
So that's all laid out on the website. You should be able to go to Mac for the Blind and locate the tutorials and then see from there how to go about purchasing them and so forth.
I just, you know, want to make them as accessible to people as possible. Obviously, right now they're my ideas based on really how I train people. The lesson order is not an accident. Basically, if you're a client of mine and anybody who has worked with me will kind of recognize the order in which I kind of teach. Though I have to say the commanders I usually teach later on, but I got so many requests privately from people who said to me, put up something on the commanders. So that's one reason why that came a little bit earlier. But I am looking for suggestions. I am open to comments, criticisms, etc., whatever I can do to make these lessons better for people. If there's applications that you specifically are interested in getting some information on, I can do a lesson on. I have ideas for Time Machine on the Mac. I have ideas to do the calendar in iOS. I'm going to probably do like the messages application, probably do mail, how to do mail on the iOS devices. So, but I am looking for people to kind of give me some encouragement and say, you know, look, this is, I'd really be interested in having one on blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm pretty happy. I was surprised. I wasn't sure how these things would be received by, you know, by the general public. These things have not even been available for 3 weeks yet, and we're doing pretty well. So I'm very happy at this point.
Excellent. And it just
fantastic.
Really just speaks to how popular the Mac has gotten. People want information, and there are fortunately more sources of information out there than there used to be. But I think these tutorials really are an excellent place for people to really begin to get the most out of their Mac. And also, I haven't had the pleasure yet of hearing the iOS tutorials, but it sounds like they're going to be a similar format, I gather. And
basically the same thing. The way I teach my clients, I just pretend as though I have a client in front of me when I do these things.
Exactly. And it's a great time to be thinking about iOS tutorials and Mac tutorials with new versions of the operating systems coming out. And I'm guessing that most everything you cover will very likely be very similar, if not identical, in El Capitan. So
I'm not trying to be operating system specific. So, you know, I will, when El Capitan is out, I'll probably do a lesson that basically just goes over any specific changes in El Capitan. But by and large, everything you see up there, you can apply to no matter what operating system of the Mac or iOS that you happen to be running.
I'd like to encourage people, if they haven't, to update from all the way back to Snow Leopard, but even the tutorials pretty well even apply to Snow Leopard, I think.
Yes.
If people do want to give suggestions or offer ideas about future tutorials and all, how is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, the easiest way is probably email. That's the form of communication that I check the most, and the email address would be John, J-O-H-N, at macfortheblind.com, macfortheblind.com. Follow me on Twitter at macfortheblind and always send me a direct message or something like that. Or you can call the office, 631, area code 724-4479. I will be away in September for a couple of weeks, so just so people know that in advance, on vacation for a change.
Even John Panarese has to take a vacation once in a while.
Yeah, once in a while.
That's right.
Nothing wrong with that. It always helps to be able to recharge our batteries a bit. So while we have you here, John, I haven't really planned this, but I'm really curious just to ask you, because I know you are a certified Apple consultant, and you do a lot of things with Apple. And so, of course, I don't expect you to reveal any inside information, but any thoughts about what we're likely to see on September the 9th with the big event coming up?
It's got me very curious, because the venue is huge. It's bigger than anything else they've really done. They're also closing the street that runs in front of the venue. They have generators and all kinds of stuff that you would never see at a basic press event. There's a lot of speculation. Do I have any clue? No, because they just don't tell you these things.
Of course not.
You know, and it's just like, you know, it's just a lot of scuttlebutt going around the Apple channels as to what it might be. Is it the new Apple TV? Is it going to be something with the car? If you ask Siri for a hint, how about a hint? Try that and see what you get, because it's kind of funny.
They get very clever, yeah, yes. He or she.
Well, it is going to be something, because that they have really gone out of their way to go back, interestingly enough, to the very venue where Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak introduced the original Apple II.
Right. So it's going to be fascinating to see. And of course, I won't be here, and I'll be on Maui on September 9th. So I'm like, nice. I'm telling my friends, do me a favor, text me if there's anything really cool, because I'm going to be like, you know, 3 hours before you guys, and I'll probably have no clue.
There aren't many places in the world where I would rather be than here at home on the 9th watching the Apple event, but I don't know. Maui, pretty much.
That sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah, I might be willing.
It'll be 10 o'clock in the morning in Hawaiian time, and I'll probably be on a beach. No offense to anybody, but so I that's why I ask people to text me.
You're not sure you're going to tune into the stream.
No, probably not. No offense to Apple and my fellow people I've worked with there, but I think I'll be on a beach.
So, Allison, I know you have fabulous intuition and fortune-telling skills. What are we going to see on the 9th?
Well, yes, I am. I am the blind seer, after all. You know? Obviously, we're going to see the new iPhones. I'm really hoping for a new Apple TV. I am hoping for Apple's rumored TV service, but I think it's going to be a while before we see that. There's rumors of a new iPad. I just got an iPad Air 2, so I don't want to have envy that quickly. So I'm kind of hoping that there isn't a new iPad just yet.
Well, just the fact that you just got one means it's likely
it will be. Yeah,
of course,
exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why I held off buying a new one. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to wait to see what they talk about in September before I decide whether I need another iPad or not.
Well, because of my work schedule, I'm using my iPhone so much more for work that I wanted something that I could test iOS 9 with without breaking it. So I figure I could break the iPad to Air 2.
Right.
Yeah, because you can always fix it.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, it's been interesting for me, speaking of the iPad, and I know Apple's working hard to try to really boost the sales a bit and all that. But since getting the iPhone 6 Plus, I've found myself actually using my – I have the iPad Air, not the 2, just the one a couple years old. I've found myself using the iPad less and less.
Well, that's what they say. They say that the tablet sales overall have been really suddenly kind of hitting a little bit of a skid. And they're really saying that the 6 Plus has, you know, unexpectedly affected that.
Well, the 6 Plus, the screen is large enough that you can, in landscape mode, very easily use the Braille screen mode. It's mm-hmm. large enough that the icons are spaced out sufficiently that it's really easy to locate icons by touch on the screen, memorize where they are. There are just so many advantages to it, even for a person who's blind, that it's just made for me grab the iPad less and less often.
Yeah, I don't use my iPad that often either. That's the other thing where I'm kind of on the fence whether I really want to buy a new one, because I just don't use it as much as I used to. And I put iOS in the same way Allison was talking about. I figure if it breaks it, it's not a primary device of mine. I only really use it when I have to train somebody on it. So I'm not even sure if I'm really going to buy a next, unless it wows me so much that I'm like, I got to have it. But most likely, if it's just an upgrade to the processor and such, I'm probably just going to stick with what I have.
It wouldn't be the first time I said I'm not going to and then went and bought one.
Yeah, that's the problem. I walk into an Apple store, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, they're good.
How sleek and thin and wonderful the new products
it's
are.
Nice,
you're like,
shiny, brand new.
They're awfully good at that, aren't they?
Yeah.
Awfully, awfully good at that. Well, it's been great having you on here, John. I think we will bring this to a close. I think we've covered the things that I was hoping we'd get to, and I want to thank you for taking some time. I know you have a lot of swim trunks to pack and all that. So I want to let you get to that. But thanks a lot for taking some time to come on and talk to us about these excellent tutorials.
Well, thank you.
John.
Like I said, it's an honor to be back here. You guys are awesome to work with, and it's great. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and we'll do it again as more of these tutorials come along. And I just bet we will have more to talk about with the new operating systems coming out. We'll just have to have you back and have another round of conversations about what we're all excited about.
I'd be glad to. Thank you.
All right. Well, Allison, I don't know whether anyone will want to talk to us after this or not, but should they want to, if you can bring it out from your brain somewhere, how in the world would they go about getting in touch with us?
Well, they would do so, and I hope they will, by sending an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. Again, that's techdoctor@dr-carter.com. Please get in touch.
Yeah, we're always glad to hear from you. And I do want to take a moment to thank Allison Sheridan of the NoscilloCast for helping me create a fabulous new Tech Doctor logo, which now appears in iTunes and will download as an image when you download the podcast. She came up with a logo with a man with a cane and a dog.
And a dog.
And so it's a very cool logo, and we hope those of you who can see it will enjoy it. And if you can't see it, maybe you'll get a sighted person to describe it for you. So we're kind of excited about the new Tech Doctor logo, and thanks, Allison Sheridan, for all of your help with that. Well, until next time, this is Robert the Tech Doctor along with Allison the Tech Doctor. I'm saying so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.